All right, if you have your Bibles here, we will be turning to the book of Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 6. We will actually be continuing in our series, Elephants in the Church. It's a bit of a play on words to elephants in the room. We're looking at things that the church really hasn't been addressing. We've looked at recently the concept of mass shootings, the very tragic event that's been happening across the U.S. for a number of years now, and how to keep faith in a very tragic, tragic world. We looked at a couple weeks ago eternal security and what it means to keep confident in a world that is constantly changing. We rest our hope on a God who never changes. We looked at last week traditional marriage and why we believe that is so important, how it mirrors the relationship the church has with Christ. The marriage is what God uses to demonstrate what it means to be part of the kingdom. And this week we're going to be looking at a topic that is very prevalent in the U.S. It's addiction. We're going to be looking at addiction and the effect it has on the world and on believers as a whole. All right, there are roughly 14 million people in America today who struggle with a life-threatening addiction to prescription drugs. 14 million. There are another 15 million who struggle with alcohol-related addictions. All right, 37 million people who smoke cigarettes, 16 million of those people who have serious health concerns because of smoking. These numbers might seem interesting to you, might be a little shocking, but they might not. It's no surprise, people smoke, people drink, people use drugs. This is something that is prevalent throughout our culture. It's something that has become the norm. I grew up in the era of the DARE program. If you've been in schools in the last 20 years, you might have heard of the program, the DARE program that the government put on. It was daring to kids to be drug-free. That was the goal. You were dared to be drug-free. And the purpose of that was quite simple. We realize that when young people, when children get addicted to things, when you get addicted at a young age, it's very difficult to break that addiction. See, addictions are very difficult to get over because they permeate every area of your life. They don't just have an impact on one thing, they have an impact on everything. I know addiction has had an impact on my life and the life of my family. I have multiple aunts and uncles who are smokers. They've tried to quit. They've done the patch, they've done the pill, they've tried hypnotherapy, they've tried to quit smoking. They can't. It is something that has control over their life. I have an older brother, I've mentioned him before, his name is Bill. He actually, just this last year, recognized he has a drinking problem. It impacted his life, his marriage, his work. It permeated his life, and it took a lot of courage for him to recognize that it was an issue. I'm very proud of him for that, and you have to understand Bill to understand why this is such a big thing for me. Bill, growing up, my parents will attest to this, never admitted he was wrong. It didn't matter what the argument was, Bill wouldn't say he was wrong. If you looked outside and Bill said, "The sky is green today," he would go the entire day, "That sky was always green." You couldn't convince him otherwise. I remember when I was in fourth grade playing Scrabble with my older brother Bill, and I played the word read, R-E-A-D, read. Fourth grade, I'm not a great Scrabble player, okay? So I play read. I tried my best, it's not a great word. Bill adds read, and he adds B, B-E, and then the letters W-I, we. And he says, it's read, be, we, it's a French word. And yeah, wrong, you could not convince him otherwise. We let it go. We let him keep the points because it wasn't worth arguing over. Bill would never admit that he was wrong, that he had made a mistake. And it took a lot for him to recognize that he had made a mistake and that he needed to change something in his life. And I am very proud of him for recognizing that in his life. I also had an uncle who struggled with drug addiction. He died last year. I got emotional first service. I will try to keep together this service. It's tough. I remember the day my mom called me. I was at school. I was in a teacher's lounge. I was working as an interpreter. And she called me at like 12:15. And I thought that was weird because she knows I work. I can't talk on the phone at work. And the first words she said, they stuck with me. I had bad news. Uncle Mac died. And I'm crying right now One for his death, but more for his kids. He had three kids that he left behind, and most of their life, he struggled with an addiction, something that really destroyed his marriage, hurt his relationship with them. Like I said, it permeated every part of his life, and it's just tough to know that his kids lost him because of an addiction. See, addictions don't just impact the people who are addicted. They impact everyone. They impact everybody in your life. It's not just you that you're hurting. You're hurting those who are around you. You're hurting friends and family, which is why this morning we're talking about addiction. All right, so if you're in 1 Corinthians, we're going to be in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 12. It says here, "All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be dominated by anything. Food is meant for the stomach, and the stomach for food, and God will destroy both, one and the other. The body is not meant for sexual immorality, but for the Lord, and the Lord also for the body." Do you see here that first part of verse 12, where it says, "All things are lawful for me"? Do you recognize it's in quotation marks? It's not written by itself. This isn't a new statement from Paul. This was something that permeated the entire culture of the society in which they lived. All things are lawful. I can do anything that I want because it's lawful for me. I can do it. It is okay. Now, the church at Corinth here, they had a number of problems, a lot of issues. They had division in the church. We read in 1 Corinthians in chapter 1 where some would claim to be of Apollos and others would claim to be of Paul. And they had this division on which person brought them to Christ. And Paul writes to him and says, it doesn't matter who told you the message. The messenger doesn't matter. It's all about the message. The gospel of Christ is what's important. They had other issues where in chapter 3, Paul compares them with infants. Now, I like infants. My wife is pregnant. We're having our third kid in November. I like babies. Babies are good. The other pastors at the church also like babies, apparently. They both just had babies. So we're all fans of infants. Infants are good things. I want you to look at my son and say, oh, he looks like you. I don't want you to look at me and say, oh, you look like your son. See, because that just doesn't make any sense. When you're an infant, you have no control. In the same way, the church at Corinth lacked control. They had bickering, arguing, disputes that divided them. They struggled with sexual immorality. He addresses that in chapters 5 through 7. They struggled with idolatry in chapter 10. They struggled with gluttony in chapter 11. There are 16 chapters written in the first book to the church of Corinth. There are 13 chapters written to the second. All right, that is more than every other church got. They had a lot of things that Paul was writing to address, and a lot of them were addictions. He's talking about, particularly in this passage, sexual addiction. They frequented prostitutes. That was what they were known to do. This it was acceptable in their culture to frequent prostitute shrines. And Paul's writing to them and saying, guys, all things, yes, are lawful. You can do that, but they're not going to be beneficial. In much the same way, it is lawful in some places in the U.S. to gamble. For example, Las Vegas. They're known for gambling. That is what they are known for. When you go to Vegas, you're going to gamble. Now, you might not know this, though. The average casino in Las Vegas makes $630,000 every single day. All right, when your primary revenue stream is gambling, that means people who are going in there are literally giving them money for nothing. $630,000 every single day goes from nothing. So, once again, it is lawful to gamble. It is not going to be beneficial. There's a reason they say the house always wins, because the odds are stacked against you when you gamble. Even in roulette, the best odds game you can play is still less than 50-50. You still have red, you have black, and you have that one green number that can still tip the odds in the house's favor. So gambling, though lawful, is not beneficial. In much the same way, anger Anger is lawful. You are allowed to be angry. There are times when it is appropriate and right to be angry. We read in Matthew 21 when Jesus enters the temple. He clears the temple out. He walks into his father's house and he looks around and they've made it into a den of robbers. They are robbing the people blind. And Christ literally throws them out of the temple. So there are times when it is okay and it is good to be angry. Tomorrow morning when you wake up, if you go to work, if your boss makes a mistake, I would not encourage you to get angry with your boss and yell at your boss. That will not go over well for you. All right? There are times when it's okay to be angry and other times when it is not. It is lawful. You can be angry, but I would not encourage you to live a life full of anger. In much the same way, it is lawful to eat. I would encourage you, unless you're fasting today, when you leave, go ahead, go home, have a sandwich. Eat some lunch, have some dinner, spend time with fellowship with other people. Eating is a very good thing. But there are times when it's not okay to eat. When you're not hungry and you're eating to try and hide something, to try and take away the pain. When you're stuck eating because it's all you know and it makes you feel just a little bit better at that moment. See, it is lawful to eat, but it is not always beneficial. So all things are lawful, but not always beneficial for us. And there are other addictions that we can look at today. I mentioned some before. The cigarettes, the alcohol, the drugs, they keep stats on those things. But there are other ones, for example, like coffee, cell phones, work, sex, pornography. We don't keep track of who's addicted to these things. But I guarantee you, there are someone in this sanctuary today who is struggling with an addiction to at least one of those things. I can't tell you how many people I've come in contact with where they say, don't even talk to me until I've had my coffee this morning. It has control over their life. They feel like they're less of a person without it. In much the same way, cell phones, the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning is check your cell phone. Or you hop on Facebook. There have been studies that show the youth, the millennials, they spend more time on social media than anything else, to include sleep. They spend anywhere from 5 to 8 hours a day on social media. That's an addiction. Something that has authority over your life. If you're sitting here right now and your phone just vibrated and you had to restrain yourself from looking at it, you might have an addiction to your cell phone. See, I don't know everybody in this sanctuary today. I don't know all of your stories. You know yourself. More importantly, God knows who you are. The Holy Spirit will convict you of the things in your life that are addictions, things that are drawing you away from Him. So we read here in verse 12, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be dominated by anything. Now that word dominated in the original language is a really cool word. It literally means to allow something to exercise authority over you. Now, I've preached before, and I've told you guys before, I enjoy playing sports. I'm a competitive person. I grew up in a competitive household. When you play a game, you play to win. All right, I enjoy playing lots of sports. If I could show you my leg right now, I have a scab that runs from here all the way down to here from church softball last week. Sliding a second. All right, I like to win. I like to be competitive. I played basketball one time with my cousin Corey. Now, my cousin Corey is in his 40s, and he has the body I wish I had when I was 20. The man is in great shape. My wife often tells me I have a man crush on this guy. I mean, he is an amazing athlete. So he's a great athlete. And he and I actually played basketball. And I remember the game very, very distinctly. It went really well for him. You see, we played basketball. We played to 11. And I scored one basket. One. If I try to drive it in, he would just, boom, stuff me. If I try to jump back and do a fadeaway, boom, stuff me. All right, again and again and again. The only basket I made was a half-court Hail Mary three-point shot because he didn't come out to block me at all. And the next time I tried that, he came out and blocked me. All right, he literally dominated me in that game. He exercised authority over me. I had absolutely no control on the outcome of that game. I could have played, I could have not played. Either way, he was going to win. In much the same way, addictions in your life, they dominate you. They control you. They have an impact that is profound. So all things are lawful for us, but not all things are beneficial. Evaluate your life. If there's something in your life today that is dominating you, that has authority over your life. And I want to look at how we're going to address that. Our next main point here is that we're called to live by faith. Colossians 1, 21 through 23 says, "And you, who once were alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds, he has now reconciled in his body of flesh by his death in order to present you holy and blameless and above reproach before him, if indeed you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel that you heard." See, at one point, you were hostile to God in your minds. Another translation would read, enemy. You were an enemy to God in your mind. Now, there might be somebody in your life who everything that they do, you would have done it the opposite way. Everything that they said, you would have said it differently. I had a lady I worked with one time who that was the case. Everything that she said, I would not have said that. Everything that she did, I would not have done that. The way that she handled herself was not the way that I would have handled myself. I can picture this person very vividly in all the interactions. I can't think of any that I would have done the same thing that she did. But you know what? The very interesting part about that is that's how you were before you knew Christ. See, Mark 12, 30 through 31 says, "The greatest commandment is this, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, body, and strength. And the second commandment is this, that you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandments greater than these." See, when you were hostile in your mind towards God, everything that you did is not how God would have done it. When you were hostile towards God in your mind, you were an enemy to God. Everything that you were doing was not the way that God wanted it done. When you thought of yourself more than others, it's very clear here, we're called to focus on God so we can focus on other people. And when you were hostile towards God in your mind, you couldn't do that. You couldn't focus on others because you were self-absorbed, ready to focus on yourself. But it says here that we were reconciled to God. Romans 5:8 says, "But God showed his love for us in this, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." So if you think of that person who everything that they did, you would have done differently. Imagine that person also being willing to die for you. Because that's what Christ did. He recognized all the mistakes that we were making. And he said, "I will die for you anyways, because I want to reconcile. I want to bring you back to me." Because we are being presented, it says, holy and blameless before God, above reproach. So you and I were not holy yet. And this is where it ties in with addiction here. You and I are not holy. We are not perfect. God is holy. God is perfect. You and I are not. There are things in our lives which will continually, day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute, tug at your mind, try to drag you away from God. So you and I have the ability through prayer to turn to God. But if we're not careful, it's very easy to allow something to have authority over us, to pull us away, to say, "I'm more important today than God is." You and I are being presented as holy because we are not in ourselves holy yet. God is making us holy. We are becoming holy. And in the end, when we're in heaven with God, we will once again be holy with him. In order to do that, though, we must continue in the faith. And this is where a lot of Christians live. They live on this spectrum. They live on the spectrum of having this self-righteousness and self-loathing. See, we're all called to be holy. If God's up here, God is holy, and we're down here. And they're continually trying to work their way up to meet God's holiness. And like I said, we're called to be holy. We want to strive to be holy. It is our calling as believers to be more like Christ. So we are called to try and become like Christ and become holy. And here's where people mess up, though. They make the mistake. When they fall off the wagon, when they turn back to their addiction, when they allow something to have authority over them, they fall away. They have this feeling of self-loathing, of self-hatred, that I can't believe I allowed that addiction, that sin, to have authority over my life again. And it's tough. You might be sitting here thinking of an addiction that you've gone back to, and you're like, "Oh, I wish I hadn't done that." But you know why you went back to it? Because for that moment, for the briefest of moment, it felt okay. It felt good. It didn't feel wrong. And then you turn back to God and you say, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. And then you try to work again to get up, and then you fall down again. And it's a vicious cycle of continually falling down again and again and again. And that's not a bad thing. But the important part here that I want you to remember is even when you fall, to turn to God in faith. We read in Romans 1, 16 through 17, where it says, for I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith. As it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. So you and I are called to live by faith. And the people who are on that spectrum, who are continually falling off and turning back to their addictions, even when that happens to you, the point is to turn back to God in faith. Recognize, I have a weakness, but God, in my weakness, you are strong. Even when I can't overcome this on my own, God, you can overcome this for me. And it's done by faith here. I love the way this wording is in the original language when it says, from faith, to faith, or for faith. Before you were a believer in Christ, you didn't have faith. You didn't trust God. You had no faith in God. You didn't earn your salvation. Your salvation came first and foremost by faith. This is the core principle of the message of Christ, is that you cannot save yourself. You are saved by God in faith. And it says here that it's from faith to faith. Or for faith. See, your faith didn't end when you became a believer in Christ. It wasn't like you finally collected enough faith to have enough faith to go to God and say, I have enough faith, I'm good. You were continuing day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute, living in faith, constantly turning to God, recognizing your own weakness, and turning to Him for strength. So we know first off here that all things are lawful, but not all things are beneficial. We know we're called to live by faith. When you're struggling with an addiction, to turn to God in faith. And lastly here, when we read 1 Corinthians 6:18, we learn to flee from temptation. It says here, flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but the sexually immoral person sins against his own body. See, Paul's addressing one particular type of addiction here, the addiction to sex. That's what he's focusing on here in this one passage. And they're called here, literally the words just say, flee, run away, don't stand near this. We read in Proverbs 6:27, it says, can a man carry fire next to his chest and his clothes and not be burned? I want you to imagine for a second that I started a fire here right in the front of the stage. It's contained, it's right here, but I decided I started it in the wrong spot. I meant to start it over there. So while this fire is active and going, I'm going to bend over. I'm going to pick it up. I'm going to bring it over. I'm just going to put it down right here. And that is not going to turn out very well for me. I will be going to the hospital very, very quickly because I'm going to be burned. In much the same way, if you have an addiction that is continually picking at you, that is gnawing on you, that you have in your life, and you... The addition here is the fire. If you continue to go back to that and say, it feels good if I get just a little closer to it. I'm just going to get a little closer to that fire because you know what? It's okay. It feels good. Eventually, you're going to end up picking that fire up and burning yourself. It's going to leave you burned. So we're called to flee from temptation. A famous quote from Cornelius Tacitus. You might not know the guy, but you probably recognize this quote. It says, he that fights and runs away may turn and fight another day. But he that in his battle is slain shall never rise to fight again. See, in your battle with addiction, I would encourage you to recognize first off what it is. Have the courage to say, this has authority over me. I have given up my authority to this thing. And say, that's not who I want to be. I want to give my authority to Christ. Recognize that this fire that's burning you is not going to benefit you. And then turn and flee from it. Do not allow yourself to be put into a position again and again and again where it will burn you. Because you and I, we want to be effective witnesses for Christ. We want our words, we want our lifestyle, our actions to show who God is, that we are worshiping a God who loves and cares for us. And we cannot do that if we allow an addiction to control our lives.